Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boyle, Nazarita Goldhammer. It's Epic Radio, 27th of December, 2023. Unless I'm mistaken, we started our radio show in 2013. So we've been at it for quite a while. 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. So this is our 11th year, and we're going into our 12th year. I just want to say that we're very grateful for everybody who listens. We have a record of listeners from all over the world. The truth is, bit by bit, we have grown a listenership, and we really appreciate that. We broadcast about important events of the day, important trends in our culture, really trying to uncover the truth of things. I would like to also thank the EPIS Psychoanalytic Institute for being the founding supportive institution. We're going to continue our Blog Talk Radio show. We're going to continue it. It's really valuable to us. It's really important. I don't want to ever stop doing it. We're going to start a podcast at our Earth Science Design Institute and Research Center, talking about all sorts of human footprint issues, design issues, both internal, interior, exterior. We're going to talk about how we treat other life forms, the ecosystem, the biosphere. We're going to talk about innovative and creative ways to be in the world. But that podcast is coming probably in the spring. We'll be broadcasting from the Rocky Mountains. But that in no way takes away from the EPIS Radio internet radio show that we do. So we're at the end of the year. What we've been doing now, this is our 52nd episode, a group of shows that we call the Interrelational Self and the Human Intimacy with Nature. And I want to say to anybody who doesn't regularly have an outlet to talk to others, to listen to others, whether or not you're teaching or you're a student, or you have people you like, groups that you enjoy, get out there, participate, listen to your own ideas. It's all of our ideas that ultimately will change things for the better. I have learned so much just by being on this show for the over a decade now. I've learned a lot about a lot of things. And I've also learned how to interview people, how to coordinate a panel discussion. And so we're going to continue. We probably will do an interview or two in 2024. If you know somebody you'd like to have us interview, let us know. Always willing to do that. And again, this is about sharing. So we draw to the close of the year here in the next few days, and then we'll be in 2024 next Monday. And see, what day of the week is that? I'm not sure, but whenever the next Monday is, that's our regular show time, and we will be here. What I've learned is that there is something in the human species, wherever we are right now in evolution, that's still destructive, that lacks empathy, that hurts others, rampantly and sadistically kills other life forms, for sport, for anger, for sadistic pleasure, for profit, for greed, all sorts of motivations that in the end do not build a strong, sustainable, enduring political economy. These characteristics certainly don't build a place for us on Earth where we're living in harmony with other beings. We just don't do it. To be sure, there are amazing people who have lived, who've seen the light and who want a different kind of human experience. And there are people now who see it. Very wise people. And you can tell because they're different. And then there's everybody else who's still trying to see more. And we awaken in different speeds and in different ways. And once you see the reality of when you get perspective and you really see the reality of what humans have done and continue to do to our planet, it will presence every one of your worst emotions. It will change you. It will change the way you are in the world if you allow yourself to see the truth. And it's only by seeing the truth that we have any chance of evaluating it and changing it. Humans are notorious for really brilliant strategies in hiding things and convoluting matters, confusing issues. We're very good at it. People get degrees in school to learn how to do that, but it's for nothing good. It's for nothing good. So one of the things I've learned is that we cannot live in isolation from the rest of the ecosystem, nor can we treat it as some bounty of Christian Catholic resources. We can't do that. It's what was wrongheaded with Christianity, and I mean all Christianity. Every Christian foundational tenet is wrongheaded, and that's okay. Doesn't mean that Christians can't change, can't awaken, and we can help them, but they're in a childlike state. They're in a childlike state, and because of that, they will look for reasons and excuses not to change behavior. There's always a reason. There's always an excuse. And yet, there are other people who will lay down everything they are and become more Christian than all Christians. And that's the paradox of Christianity, is that what Christianity could be, it's not. But what science could be, it's not. And so we have all kinds of opportunities to help each other. Nobody's immune. I'm not immune. I'm not perfect. But I am trying every single day to make a contribution. And it's not with arrogance that I say that. There are others, and they're very smart and very morally aware. And we try to help each other. Again, the interrelational footprint. And so a second thing that I've learned in this long year of shows is it's about intimacy. It's about being aware. Intimacy is about being sensitive and aware, recognizing, acknowledging, experiencing, seeing, listening. Experiencing suffering in the other and then doing something about it. There are interventions. There are things. And there will be people who will live their whole lives without true empathy. They may engage in kinship empathy, which is more of a physical, a non-thinking drive, or they may think, they may operate in terms of doctrinal empathy, which means you follow a rule in a book. But real empathy means you transform. It means you recognize that you are the other. The other is you. And that is a profound understanding. It's an axiom. It's the only way forward. And it means we have to dispense with fear. We have to dispense with anxiety. We have to stop this silly nonsense about acquisition, owning. My suggestion is that everything you own should go into a community organization. Certainly when you die, you shouldn't just give it to your grubby little descendants. You should put it to very good use. Everybody leaves a little something, and we can take that little something and we can put it to really good use. You just have to find out how that's going to be. Now, Nazarita, good morning. Welcome. Let's talk about maybe some wisdom that you've gained by doing the show over the last 11 years and certainly the last year. Welcome to the show at Epis Radio.
Thank you. Well, we've done a lot of shows on nature and our connection with nature or our non-connection with nature. And you know, I think part of it that we're looking at, especially coming to a new year, I'm really focused on change, that humans, from my point of view, want something that is unchangeable. You know, I hear it in politicians. They say, let's go back and do something the way it was. And everybody always has this rosy view of the way it was. And yet, if you really go back to the way it was, unchanged, you would not really be happy. And so there are so many things that contribute. It has nothing to do with revisiting people that you love and wish that you were here, or you know, dogs or cats that you love immensely and that you wish you could be back in that place. But I'm saying that we tend to think that everything should be unchanged, and yet we want to change. And so there's this quagmire that humans create between wanting everything around us to stay the same, but us to be able to change as a part of that, but everything else to stay the same. I look at that in nature. Nature is ever evolving, changing. It's in flux. It is growing. And yet a lot of people want to keep nature just the way that they remember it, not the way that it is changing. Like, for instance, a lot of ecological habitats, as humans view them, are changing because they believe invasive species are taking over. And yet what's really interesting is places like Joshua Tree. Joshua trees are not known to be of Joshua Tree. They're not native. They came there. They were introduced. And yet now everybody thinks that it should stay that way. And that happens with a lot of species, plant species, tree species, animal species that come into an ecosystem, and people say, oh my God, we've got to kill all the invasive species. But at the heart of this is that the concept of, you know, if a butterfly's wing you know, moves on one end of the world, it causes, you know, a tsunami on the other, that we fail to realize our connection to everything, and we fail to recognize our actions are connected, and they produce this ripple effect wherever we go, and nature affects us in the same way. So what if we weren't that? I mean, I'm looking at that in really the new year saying, I want to change. I want to be more aware. I want to be more in tune with nature. I want to recognize more. And so what does that mean? If I want that, nature wants that also. You know, they often talk about like earth, the earth has a heartbeat that is, you know, every 30 million years or something. And they're just discovering this, and I'm thinking that's because we are all energized with aliveness. And yet we persist in thinking that everything else but ourselves has to stay stagnant. And once you let go of that concept of stagnation, or the way it was, or the way it should be, or the way that we remember it, then you start to participate in the real aliveness of the world. If we could be in that instance of aliveness, of you know, participating in energy. I listened to this tape. It was because I really enjoyed listening to a tape, and this person was talking about that they talk to things in their house. And I thought that was really funny because I have done the same. I believe that everything has this energy, aliveness on a certain level. It may not be the level that maybe a human recognizes as chatting back to someone or expressing emotions, but they are. It is alive, and everything that we have is speaking to us in a certain way. I also think that humans are stepping away from empathy. Instead of becoming more empathetic, that as a species we are becoming less empathetic to ourselves, to others, to the world, to non-human others, to nature. We're starting, and this is over a hundred year process of, maybe it's always been, we have not awakened the empathy gene. As a matter of fact, we're finding drugs that cause us to be less empathetic, and they're just finding that out. I just read something on Tylenol, that Tylenol, all their acetaminophen, that people who take it regularly, it affects the pain center, which is what it's for. It's to help with pain. And yet pain helps us to be more empathetic, which I thought is interesting based on some conversations you and I have had recently about pain, trauma, pain, experiencing the pain of others, and how that awakens or should awaken. It hasn't always happened, but some people divert it to anger or some other violence, but it should awaken empathy. And isn't that really what we're going for? We're if we could be really empathetic and be kind and loving, wouldn't we want to be that?
Well, I'm not so sure that people like empathy. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hello? I can. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah. So I want to make sure. So I'm not so sure that everybody enjoys the experience of empathy. I'm not so sure that that's true.
I think you're right.
Take the whole issue of the DSM mental health definitions out of it. The fact is, as a whole, if you look at the population as a whole, and you ask 10,000 random people about empathy, and you start exploring it with them, you will find lots of ways, not cognitively, precognitively, and otherwise, that people use to escape from empathy, because empathy costs energy. At least people think that. If I'm empathetic, then that means I'm taking into account another dimension of my existence. That's that interrelational dimension. There are lots of people who just act in the world based upon their own perceived self-interest, or even people who act without regard to anybody's self-interest. And so there's no, that if you look at the sequence of decisions, operational steps in thinking, feeling, and action, it takes more time and more energy to think about and consider the other. And empathy is a lot more than just a feeling state. Empathy includes a feeling state, but empathy also has a cognitive component as well. And I think there are a lot of people who prefer aggrandizing their own self-interest or their perceived self-interest, acting in terms of their empowerment or their power in the world, that they actually enjoy that. They enjoy getting one up on somebody. I guess that's what I wanted to say. They prefer the experience of beating somebody or winning or out-competing somebody rather than that experience of empathy, which means, well, we share in the goods. We share in good, tangible and intangible. And I've some of my examples all revolve around doing conflict work, conflict writing, theorizing, being a psychotherapist, being a psychoanalyst, being a mediator, and understanding that people do have an element in their self-system in which they prefer acting from non-empathetic motivations. They prefer that they get more enjoyment out of that. So they in fact, they either get the enjoyment strictly from a perceived win or a perceived non-interrupted line to attain their goal. They don't want anybody getting in their way, and they have an enjoyment out of successfully doing a project of whatever kind. And then there are other people who the need for an added feature, and that is that somebody else loses, get a great enjoyment over identifying as a winner and that the other will identify as the loser. And so those are all non-empathic or non-empathetic cognitive strings with a concurrent and attached emotional domain. And so if you look around for the last many years, let's just take the last 20 years, as Rita, we've talked about it, for example, the capitalist, even doesn't even have to own a company. But a capitalist whose sole objective in the world is to amass money, to have a big house, to prove to everybody that he or she is winning something. These people are often very lacking in empathy. They just don't give a shit. They don't care. And they like evidence that will show that they were somehow smarter or more clever or more strategic and tactical than their competitors. That's where their enjoyment comes. And you tack on to that the development of the idea of losing. So by focusing on the other's loss, that's part of what I win. And I want everybody to be clear on that part of feeling like we've won something for many people is that somebody else loses. So it can't be the case that I'm winning and I've got everything that I think I need and I want, and the person, my competitor, is doing pretty well but not quite as well as me. That's less delicious than the competitor who loses, who goes out of business. And we do that not only with humans, but we do it with other species. There are humans who take great glee in being able to lock animals up in zoos and marine parks, factory farms, and in putting animals to work. Like the old idea of the ox, the bullock, that somehow we're superior, that we're more clever, that God has somehow granted us a privilege because we're better. And so there's this whole, at bottom, it's an ontological hierarchy, but it in psychology and neurophysiology, it includes all kinds of hormonal, mental, psychological phenomena that make us feel good. And you could probably measure it in the brain with serotonin. That would be my guess. So I agree with you fully. We have an empathy issue. People, they really enjoy the fruits of winning, the fruits of the kill, beating somebody up, shooting an innocent animal, trapping an innocent animal, killing him, dipping him in boiling water to eat him. It's an enjoyment. But just remember that that's not just an enjoyment against another species. We do the same thing with other humans. Yeah, Nazarita, do you have anything more on the empathy issue? Because I think it's really of great critical importance. And of course, it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that we have drugs, over-the-counter and prescription drugs that affect our levels of empathy. I can tell you that formerly, as a therapist and right before I started moving into more just purely psychoanalytic work, every client I ever had was taking antidepressant medication. They all reported the same thing. They felt subdued, lack of awareness. They weren't really present with their feelings. And they didn't really feel much empathy. They became zombies. So that's not too far of a leap when you have a culture who's driving people in ways that are, or in ways that violate well-being or interrelational well-being. You can get people to do almost anything if you give them the right medication. So what do you think about that? Anything else on that, the empathy issue?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about a lot of things in regards to that. I think that we use different approaches to each other, you know, in even our personal relationships. We don't have empathy. We tend to have less empathy, which is a really interesting paradox. We tend to have less empathy for those that we love than those out in the world. And I find that to be really intriguing. Like we feel like we can unload and make the people we love feel really bad without the thought of how it affects them. I used to know this teacher, and they were fucking doom and gloom with everything. And it was like life just sucked the very life out of everyone. Everything was dark. Everything was, you know, this is what's going to happen. It was just really horrible. And I realized how much it affected me. because it was like the opposite of life. It was the anti-life. It was really dark, and I mentioned it once because I was bold, and they said, "This is for your own good." And I remember thinking of that, and I just I've been replaying that in my mind, thinking, "Wow, that is lack of empathy, because you have no idea what I'm really feeling. You only are putting something that you feel in your doom and gloom that everybody should enter into." And yet it was so anti-life. And I think that in terms of empathy, we do that to those that we love, which is the paradox of human evolvement. And we tend to do it to everybody. We tend to think that without listening, without really understanding what is really empathy, is it really understanding how someone feels and then realizing that you could either sit with them or you could make it better, or you could help in some way, even utilizing it in terms to make a difference in the world. But instead, I think that we don't look on empathy like that. We look on empathy as a weakness, that it is, we look on it, there used to be a thing about sympathy and empathy. Like if you sympathize, it means you're down in the hole with somebody. And you're both in the dark place. So it's not like, you know, one's in a dark place, now you got two in a dark place. And there's this whole idea of what empathy is, to understand someone's suffering and yet to be able to help with that in some way, or to sit with them but not to become that. And so I think that there's a lot of things in our history. You brought up DSM. There's this whole joke going around on the internet about the DSM. There's something from the Hard Times, and it's saying the new baseline for normal mental health is this feeling like dying, but not really suicidal. And it's supposed to be a joke, right? It's a satire. And yet, it is actually a reflection of our time. It's actually a reflection. And I find that to be really interesting. That's what satire actually is. It's like the truth, but presented in a way that people think might be funny, but it's actually true. And anyway, so I think we have a long way to go before knowing the real interpretation of empathy, of knowing the real meaning of empathy. I think we don't know. I think that we're struggling to figure that out, to say, okay, I have empathy, but do I have empathy, or am I expressing my own, or is it just so close to what I feel that means that I'm empathetic to it? Or what if I don't feel that? Am I empathetic to it? So I think that interpretation of empathy may be growing, and it may be something that humans, as we evolve, hopefully we can evolve, that we will discover a new meaning to empathy. What really is empathy? That would be what I would be thinking.
Well, you know, empathy has been theorized mostly at the psychological level. It's a product of the paradigm of psychology as a chosen a scientific and artistic craft that's based upon principles of a certain kind of way of doing science in the Western world. But there are other ways to think about the experience of empathy. If you think about the psychoanalytic approach, a Dasein analytic approach, an ontological approach, what do I mean by all that nonsense, all that gobbledygook? Well, it's like this. My experience of the world is that many people don't fully understand or appreciate our interrelational self, that it is a radical basis for human existence. We're always in relation to the other, imagined or real, or both and otherwise. And people, as I've walked my life for 63 and a half years, I have learned that people see themselves primarily as individual monads and alienated and split off. In that model, which we've constructed in the West, it is a model, and there's lots of evidence that we've constructed it in the East as well. Our very paradigm for understanding the world is at the very bottom. It's wrong. It's wrong-headed. That's what I'm getting at. If we continue to work with false foundational models, whatever we do isn't going to solve anything. It's just frenetic. And so there's a metaphor about people being upset and maybe seeing a psychotherapist. Treatment never is very effective if we just focus on the ripples at the top of the pond, you know, in the wind or whatever. You have to go all the way down to the bottom of the pond. And then you have to go around the pond and see how the pond is situated. So it's a structural analysis as well. And so we have these, I think, very, very completely false ideas about the nature of reality, the nature of the human place on Earth, the nature of our ecosystems, our biosphere, really basic questions of life. I think that we're like three-year-olds, and we're just barely becoming aware of our reality. And I want to go further. There's something I want to try to articulate. So we've been duped by so-called causal models or explanatory models in science in the last 300 years. An explanatory model in science, a simple one, is if I take a ball and I drop it, it hits the ground. And so I can explain that if I let go of the ball, it will hit the ground, it will rebound off the ground. That's a natural science type of thinking. It's explanatory in the sense that it's causal. A causes B. But what we haven't spent much time thinking about is that, and I want to radicalize the idea a little bit. I want to support what you said, and I want to radicalize it. The idea about my actions having an effect on the other side of the planet. So the way most people would think about that, Nazarita, is that this action causes another action over here on the West Coast, and then another action. And if I had a really astute measuring apparatus, I could look at all that causal trace, right? I could trace the causal links all the way to the other side of the planet. But it's my belief we've all consumed way too much of that Kool-Aid. People learn statistical reasoning. Statistical reasoning has only been misused. It has been misused far more than it's ever been well used. And you say that to somebody who uses stats all the time, and they will look at you like you're crazy. But in reality, it's true. It's a more sophisticated rendition. It's the same old wine in a new bottle. It's causal explanatory thinking, and it comes from the natural science model. There are way more, there's a beginning of way, a far more sophisticated ways of understanding the relationship between complex events. Now, we may not be smart enough yet as a species, and I think that's likely true. Nobody's smart enough, and we're not smart enough as a group to really get what I'm about to say. It's a hypothesis. And the hypothesis is that every entity and every system that is has a link with every other thing and every other system that is. It's a different way of seeing it. And so I am linked with the unknown. If I can't see somebody or some area in Africa or in India, that doesn't mean that I don't have an unconscious natural world link with them at an ontological basis. And so I think it's absolutely true that what I do has immediate effects, not through a causal chain. That's too simple. That's an old paradigm that we're going to have to replace. But I think the world, the earth is far more capable, far more complicated. And I would say that what I do has an immediate impact on every other, on life as a whole, and each aspect of life. And so when I hurt myself, I hurt the world. When I hurt a dog, I hurt the world. If I hurt anything, I hurt the world. And it's a direct, I would not say that it's a causal link. I would not say that. I think that we don't yet have the language for it. We're seeking a new kind of understanding. But if I say I am the other, and if you start with that kind of thinking, if when I hurt myself, I hurt the other at the same time because I am the other. If I hurt myself, I hurt the other. If I hurt the other, I hurt myself. And it's a universalizable type of thinking. It's a hypothesis. And I think if people would think in that way, they would come to realize, it's just like if I pull a concept from architecture, people with really big, beautiful, fantastic, wealthy homes had to get those materials from somewhere. And as an astute architect pointed out, whenever you have beauty over here, you've created a dump somewhere else. And people don't want to believe that. That beautiful diamond you get from De Beers, that came from exploiting humans and exploiting the land. Those beautiful wool clothes that you might wear, it came from abusing the animals from which the wool came. Or the blue jeans that are so cool. So indeed, we have to start tracking the consequences and start thinking in a different way. We're out of time. Nazarita, I'm sorry I stole your thunder at the end. Do you want to wish our listeners well as we close? Okay. So we're going to come back. Is next Monday the end of the month? Let's see.
Next Monday is the first.
Okay, so when we come back, it'll be the start of 2024. This is Epis Radio signing out. We'll be back.